So today will be our first episode on a series I'm going to run within the Vet Talk podcast, Perspectives on Veterinary Medicine. I'm hoping that this will allow us to, wherever we are in our career as veterinarians, get some perspective, whether we're a new vet, a vet who's been out there a few years, or a vet who's closer to retirement, so we can kind of compare to other people and just not live in such a isolated manner as veterinarians do. Hopefully this will be helpful to vets out there, and hopefully it'll give some idea of what other vets have gone through and maybe give some light to what you're going through now, as well as just some interesting historical information. So we'll get started with our first guest, Dr. JT Williams.
So thanks for joining us again, JT. You're becoming the most, besides myself, the most frequent voice on the podcast that's heard.
So is this like on SNL when I get to, you know, the five time appearance, I get some kind of prize?
I'll work on your prize.
Okay. All right.
But thank you for doing this episode, because I'm trying to create something for you to think back about on your career some, for vet students coming out to kind of, you know, just hear what it's really like and what they might be getting themselves into. Because even coming out of vet school, I don't think you really know.
No, you're right.
And also just, and for me personally, you know, I'm growing in the profession, going through things and wanting to hear from seasoned practitioners, because I've been depressed about certain parts and happy about others. And I'm just like, I think vets in general at any age need to hear what other people have gone through, because we're very insular, I think, a lot of times.
So
I'm just kind of hoping to let other people hear what other vets have done. So I appreciate you sharing some of this stuff.
My pleasure.
But I guess we'll get started. What got you into vet medicine? Were you 2 years old and knew you wanted to be a veterinarian?
Yeah, so I grew up in Maysville, Kentucky. And in, as you know, in Kentucky, there's no vet school. So it was one of those things where, no, I was not a little kid, always wanted to be a vet. I was not that. But I did always, you know, love animals. And it was always kind of in the back of my head, but not the front. And then as I went through undergrad, I fell in love with biology and got to be where, well, what am I going to do? Well, I wasn't sure. So I went to University of Kentucky, did a couple of years of graduate school there. And, you know, then vet school was a little bit more, you know, rolling about in my head, but a big hang up for reasons I won't go into, but personal reasons, I didn't really want to go too far away from home. And of course, Auburn has the reciprocal agreement with, you know, having some seats, and that was an awful long way from home. So,
like the driving time.
Yeah. And so I, at the time I was just getting married, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to apply to vet school, and they'll tell me what I need to do to get in, and, you know, I'll go from there. So I applied to the University of Tennessee, which was only 4 hours from my home. 3 hours. I was actually living in Lexington at the time, so just 3 hours. And lo and behold, they took me. So, you know, after that, that's, you know, that kind of, I guess the rest is history. But the thing that really drew me to veterinary medicine, as I said, I was, you know, I fell in love with biology in undergrad. And I liked, you know, the anatomy and physiology and all that, but I can't say I ever really wanted to be a physician either. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons that is I didn't think I wanted to focus on one area. I liked everything. And in veterinary medicine, I saw the opportunity to kind of do everything. You know, you are a cardiologist, a dermatologist, an anesthesiologist, a surgeon, you know, and you can do ophthalmologist, you know, internal medicine, on and on and on. And the other thing is, I also had an interest in business. I actually was an accounting major when I went into undergrad, and I could even do that. And I do that. So that was really the allure of veterinary medicine to me, was the ability to do a little bit of everything.
And as well, your accounting helps you because you own your own business, which helps you with that. But also, and I've learned a lot from your business management, which I always appreciate. But owning your own business or just being a vet, I think you can guide yourself where you want. You know, I don't like doing orthopedic work, so I don't do much orthopedic work, but I really like it. So, and as a business owner, you have a lot more freedom, I think, than I, you know, just a graduate coming out of school as well.
Yeah, that's true. Because when I graduated, I did not think, when I went through school, I thought I'm going to do small animal. Of course, I had to learn everything. And then when I got out, the job that was offered to me was a mixed animal practice. Yeah. So, you know, wasn't a big fan, but I did it until the point in which I got to the position where I didn't have to. I didn't hate it by any stretch. I actually enjoyed those years, but it's like you said, now I have the, you know, the ability or the, to pick and choose. And, you know, now I have a part-time veterinarian who is not fond of surgery. Mm-hmm. And I like surgery. So you know, now I say, you don't have to do any if you don't want. I'll do it all.
And I'll do it, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and so that's worked out well.
To a point, you have to pay the bills, but to a point, it's your own adventure, too.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
How long have you, when I made the questions for this, I'm hopefully going to interview some people just out of vet school, too. And I put it, the young graduates, and then I put for us, the seasoned practitioners. how long have you been practicing?
I started July 1st, 1993. So 30 and a half years.
My numbers keep going up too, but I don't think I'll catch up to you.
Yeah. If you do catch me, it means something happened to me, right?
So where all have you worked? Did you went straight out of vet school to where you are?
Graduated University of Tennessee in May of 93. I had interviewed several places, wanted to come back even, you know, closer to home. Interviewed a few places. There was no really good fit. So we ended up back home living with my mother. We had one young son, 2-year-old at the time. And while I was, you know, we had to land somewhere. So we were here. I was still interviewing places, but a position came open in one of the two vet clinics in my hometown, kind of unexpectedly. And that's where I started July 1st, 1993, and have been there ever since.
Which you must like it there.
Yes. There were Drs. Jim Boyd and Dr. Jack Hayden were the two owners at the time, two very, very great mentors. Our personalities just meshed immediately. Then in 96, I bought Jim's half of the practice. 2001, I bought Jack's half, and I've been sole owner since. I've had a couple of associates in between there, but mostly it's been, you know, solo.
Had a wonderful relief veterinarian, right?
Absolutely, yes. It was the godsend.
That's still my favorite interview thing, because I basically went to you and said, I don't want to work for you. And you said, you don't want to hire me. And I ended up working for you for 10 years. So,
that's right. Yes.
So how have you seen the profession change over the years, for better or for worse? What's, you know,
well,
seen a few changes, I'm sure.
Yeah. And again, I mean, there have been some that are nationwide and then some local, which, you know, they pretty much probably, I guess, parallel each other. But, you know, personally, as I said, I started out the mixed animal practice that was about 50-50, large versus small. When Jack retired in 2001, it was about 90-10. The large animal just took a nosedive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I have, as far as personally, you know, that the decrease in, or actually the cessation of large animal, me practicing large animal medicine is one thing. Mm-hmm. The other thing that is, I think, a good thing for me, I don't know about my clients would agree, but earlier in those days, it was just expected and people did their own emergency work. You know, we were on call every third week. There were three of us, so we rotated every third weekend and at night. And it could be quite stressful, overwhelming, taxing, whatever adjective you want to use. And then, you know, we, in being in a rural county, or small county, I should say, a small area, we're 60 miles from Cincinnati and 60 miles from Lexington. Even those places didn't have a lot of emergency clinics, but there was certainly nothing close. But then over time, it got to the point where, for me anyway, the standard of care that was required for emergencies got to the point where I couldn't, or I didn't feel like I was given what needed to be given. And I felt more comfortable referring, especially the real emergencies, GDVs, that sort of thing, to places that, and suddenly, not suddenly, I guess, but, you know, when I was growing up in high school and I had a friend that lived out where my clinic is now, it's 5 miles from my house. It seemed like it was more of a trip to get out there. Because the roads were different, you know, cars were different. And now I drive that, you know, I go back and forth three times a day. So it's not that big of a deal. Same thing with 45 minutes away. If back in 1993, I was like, you go to the emergency clinic 45 minutes away, people would balk at it quite a bit.
Yeah.
They don't now, you know, because some people are driving that every day to go to work.
Yeah. When we went a few weeks ago, when we came down to Maysville, I'm like, this road is straighter. And it was pretty straight when I was taking it more recently.
Yeah. A couple of other things. One is how, and this is a worldwide thing, technology, if you will, you know, how we're getting paid. When I first started, they did not accept credit cards. It was, you know, cash or check. A lot of people wrote checks. And, you know, you took them and whatever. And now there are some days where we won't have any cash or we won't have any checks. We typically have one or the other, but by and large, it's, you know, it's all cards.
I've been amazed how I've seen that too. And
just
everything's on a credit card for good, for bad. I mean, I like it as a business owner because it's, you know.
Yeah, I mean.
Secure.
My previous the previous owners were hesitant to do that, first of all, because they didn't have, it wasn't nearly as but they also didn't want to pay that fee. Well, you know, my thought that is, if I give somebody more options with how to pay, then they're more likely to spend more money and it'll cover that fee. And the fee is just a cost of doing business. And, you know, you can incorporate that into your prices if you want.
Yeah.
So when, you know, again, when I became owner, I did that. And I mean, it was definitely a good thing. And you're going to have to do it eventually anyway.
And I kind of do it like you do, because I know I'm paying for it somewhere because it's passed on in every business.
Yep.
But when people put the charge separately, it just kind of bothers me in my mind.
Yes.
So I've never put that as a extra charge. So
no, I've discussed that with my staff and we all agree that that's just kind of, it just kind of is a put off, I think. Then the other thing, which is really big. And I have to admit again, I went kicking and screaming into the paperless void, but, you know, when I started, everything was paper. Matter of fact, ours were little hanging folders. I mean, they were,
they were kind of half.
Yeah. Sure. They were bigger than index cards, but they were, and you know, you had somebody that had several animals and those things would get pretty thick. So then I switched eventually to more of the full size paper folders that you'll see in doctor's offices with the little tags with the, you know, the years. And we did that 1 year and it was better, but still you had to rely on people knowing the alphabet to file them correctly.
Yes.
And then came the paperless, you know, and I don't believe anything's paperless. It might be paper light, but with the use of scanners now. But and people would always say, and I'd read the articles, you know, paperless. I never wanted to do it, but when I did it, it was great. Blah blah blah. I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Then I did it, and it is great.
I did it very early. I'm glad. What I find weird is because I watched you make the transition. I was very happy you did.
Yeah.
But the students come out and they don't remember that they don't they some of them haven't seen the charts. So like my computer program says chart number. And then, so when we're writing the paperwork for the blood work that we send off, it asks for a chart number. And I'm like, yeah, just get the chart number off the computer. And they don't realize that that is initially from a hanging chart.
A physical thing, yeah.
Physical. Yeah, they don't get that connection. And I'm just like, what? How old am
Yeah,
I?
I guess
You know.
now they're EMRs, right? Electronic medical records. Not charts.
Yeah, because
I still call them charts.
I do too. So
Yeah.
yeah, so that's funny that you some of those things because I when I came up with this question, I was thinking you'd I don't know talk about kind of you know how kind of more what you said with your coverage of stuff and the ER clinics, not kind of the technology of the credit cards and
Yeah.
the charts, but I mean that's really big. It's how it really has affected how everyone practices and stuff.
Yeah, because the thing that has not changed and I don't think will ever change and should not change is or are things like the physical exam. You
Yeah.
know, there's nothing, almost nothing going to give you more information than getting your hands on that animal.
Yeah.
And there's no substitute for it. So you know, that's now you can have the blood machines, which is another thing that was, you know, when I first started, we didn't have in-house blood work. You had to send it off, and that was, you know, so that was a big advancement for me. But you know, there are some things in human and veterinary medicine that are just so basic that and essential that they need not and should not change, such as the physical
And
exam.
that's the fun part, right? Getting your hands
Yeah.
on the animal.
Yeah.
Did were you did you used to send some of your blood to the human hospitals? Someone told me
Yes.
that.
Yes,
Yeah.
we did. We had a deal with the human hospital, and we would actually they would come out and get it.
Oh,
Put it on
wow.
the front porch, and they gave us a little box, you know, a little insulated box, and they'd come out and get it, and they would run it for us.
I
And
don't
it
think my
was
doctor would do that today.
yeah, and well, they've eventually stopped. And I would also used to run down radiographs, the film, when our processor would go down. Now, of course, they have digital, so that's not, you know, that's not the case. I haven't gone that road yet, and that's not because I don't want to, but I just
It
haven't
is a
found the
big
right.
expense.
Yeah, it's a big expense. Yeah.
I do love my digital, but I got as much warranty as I could on it.
Yeah.
But
Yeah. Yeah.
so speaking of the exam and stuff, have you seen new dis well you we just recorded our Parvo episode that you
Yeah.
did. But have you seen new diseases pop up since you've been practicing, or have you seen diseases that I wouldn't see because they're gone now.
The one that pops into my mind and that fits into that latter category is distemper. Have you ever seen a case of distemper?
I may have in like raccoons is
Okay. Yeah.
wild animals maybe
Because when I
because
was in, I'm
yeah
sorry, go ahead.
no I'm just saying in wild animals with some of the wildlife rescue I might have but I don't think I've ever seen it in a dog or a cat
Yeah.
or yeah.
So we spent a lot of time about that in school. And again, that's one that, you know, if you listen to our Parvo episode, we talk about vaccination a lot. That is one that the vaccine has probably pretty much eradicated, or pretty close to it anyway. Although I did hear of some outbreak here recently again. But it was one that, you know, it was difficult to diagnose. You had to, it might be better now, but you had to do titers. You did a conjunctival scrape. And, you know, I learned how to do all that. I did see a couple of cases early on. I think I told you in the parvo episode, I had one that had parvo and then it came down with distemper. And I diagnosed that. I mean, I knew it, but I probably have only seen that I know of, you know, half a dozen. And those were all in my first probably 5 or 6 years out. So
I didn't think I'd, when I saw it in the rescue, I'm like, huh, I've never seen this in a companion animal.
Yeah.
And it wasn't a firm diagnosis because wildlife rescue work. And we were like, well, this is not going to be, but yeah.
Now on the other end, the one that has emerged greatly in my career is Lyme disease. You know, we learned about it. We learned about it from Lyme County, Connecticut. It was just in the Northeast, you know, it was carried by the deer tick, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then as slowly as the years went on, you know, you would kind of hear of, and they even did a study once of some hunters where they would, when they would kill a deer, that somebody would, I'm sure some graduate student would pluck the ticks off of it and they'd check them for Lyme and, you know, there weren't any.
Yeah.
And then slowly but surely, you know, with the change in climate and, you know, the travel and everything, then a few cases would start popping up until now we use the, you know, the 4DX from IDEX to test for those. I mean, this past year, there was one point I was seeing a Lyme case a week.
Yeah.
And, I mean, and so, you know, it went from in Kentucky, zero to now, you know, I wouldn't even want to know. And a lot of them, you know, then we do the quant C6 to see if it is an active infection. And, you know, I don't know that number, but over half of them are probably closer to 75% are. And I know some people, some personal friends that have had it and they've had some devastating effects in humans. Yeah.
I'm seeing it in dogs as much as you are, I'm quite sure. And I'm seeing it in horses too.
I didn't even think about that.
I've got a whole I'll have a podcast episode out about that because that's even more, not cutting edge, but there's a lot of debate in the horse world how to handle and diagnose and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So it's been interesting listening to the lectures and seeing all the weird effects that Lyme disease can have because it affects so much of the body for so long. I didn't think about Lyme disease because that's kind of, since I've started practicing, been getting more dramatic, at least here. And Lyme,
here definitely
they've dealt with it, so
yeah,
that's interesting. Any other diseases or anything?
I mean, I've actually seen a decrease in heartworm, and I would like to say it's due to my my pushing of the preventatives, but I don't know that we do a really good job of that. But we certainly test for it. I mean, obviously we're testing everyone we find Lyme, we're testing for heartworm too. I don't understand why that is in this area, why it's gone in my practice the way gone down. I'm glad.
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing. Yeah.
But there's nothing else that comes that jumps out at me besides that. Yeah.
So this is close to my heart. Are there any drugs? Because I'm on my last two bottles of Primor. And it hurts me that they discontinued that drug.
Yes.
I don't know why. It's a great drug. But are there any drugs you miss because they don't make them? Or do you, some of these new drugs, are you like, I'm so glad I have this now?
So Primor is one that I used. And before that, it was the old SMZ-TMP tablets. I don't know. I don't think they make those anymore. I can still get the liquid, but...
Did I start you on Primor?
No, I had it before.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
You just used the heck out of it while you
were there. Yeah, I love that drug.
I'll tell you one that that I do miss. It was, and you may not have. It may have been gone before you even started. Did you ever use Solu Delta Cortef?
Yeah. It's It's a liquid steroid, right?
Yeah. And the guy, the drug rep,
Endorsements, that's all you use.
I
That's all.
wasn't there, but the drug rep would come in and he said, when he sold it to him, he said, "This is life in a bottle." And you know, obviously that's not the case, but I do miss that in especially in things like hit by cars, you know, traumatic, where you need a really quick, the quick acting steroid. It didn't last very long. The other thing though, it was cool the way it mixed. It had that vial with a
That's
rubber
what you,
stopper between it.
and you like pushed or
You
something.
pushed it down to mix it. Yeah, that was always cool.
Yeah, we used it. I can't even remember for what. When I was a preceptor, at Park Equine, I'm trying to remember what we used it for. But I remember, yeah, pushing it down, and
Yeah.
I haven't seen it since then. Is it gone, or
Yeah, it's
do
gone.
it's
It's
gone? Okay,
gone.
well, that might be why I haven't seen
Yeah,
it.
it's totally gone. The other one was an old anesthetic that I was trained on in school, thiopentol,
Yeah,
that, you know, short
I've read
acting
about that.
barbiturate.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, I mean, we used it in everything, pre-medic, you know, pre-anesthetic. And it wasn't too long after I graduated that it went away, so I had to kind of readjust. As far as new drugs, methotrexate, I like
Okay.
it. I like the new. Okay, so let me back up. When I got out of school, there was the flea treatments were, you know, the bombs, the flea sprays, the dips. You know, that kind of stuff. So when you talk about a new drug, to me, Frontline was revolutionary.
Yeah.
Okay, in 1995 or whenever it came out. But that whole family of, you know, flea control drugs has been nothing short of revolutionary for the veterinary industry and more importantly for the pets.
Yeah.
So I won't even go into those, but the other ones would be these newer antipyretics, Apoquel,
Oh, yeah, that, yeah.
Vitapoint, you know, those two specifically, because we're able to get away from the steroids more and not have those effects while still giving those animals relief.
Yeah.
I think those have been really good. And I think there's going to be even more to come. Not necessarily in that vein, but
Just the amount of new drugs are popping each year. There seems to be a
Yeah.
bunch of good new drugs, and
Yeah.
it's most mind-boggling.
Yeah. But I would say those are the biggies for me.
Yeah. What about what equipment has made you happy during your career?
So as I mentioned before, the in-house lab made me
Yeah.
happy. And I know for you young folks, that's going to be no big deal. But imagine doing it without it. Okay. And you know, again, I could send it to the hospital, but still it's an overnight thing. So that would, you know, I had a laser for a few years, and when I miss it, I really miss it.
It
If
was
that
good
makes
for very
sense.
good, certain things. It was
For
really good.
certain things. But when it died, it was not worth the investment for
Yeah.
those things, you know, to do that again. So I enjoyed it while I had it. As I said, I had not gotten into digital radiography. I would love to, because those images are very, very nice. And I probably will at some point before I retire, I would guess, but that time's not right now.
And there's a learning curve to it too, which is because you see so much more.
Yeah,
Because
I
I
bet.
when I would do relief or at my place when I had the digital, and then I'd come down to yours, I was like, whoa, wait, I have to retrain my mind. Now in
Yeah.
vet school, I don't know how many, films I looked at. So it's like, I've done this, I know this, but I had to readjust and be
Yeah,
like,
right.
you
Yeah.
know.
Of course, when I got out of school, we still had the tanks of fixer developer and water, where we would, you know, hand dip them
Oh,
in.
I was thinking the processor, but no, you mean
No,
the hand.
no, no.
Yeah.
Hand dip. And then we got another processor, automatic processor, not too long after I I started, and then the one I have now, I've had for, oh goodness, decades probably.
I
And
don't
it's
know how
still,
many. Yeah, I don't know
yeah, I
how
mean,
many
it's the,
clinics I've been in where there are certain rooms I can still, I know exact if I close my eyes because that's what I had to do to,
yes.
oh, I know exactly where everything still is unless you move
Yeah.
something.
Nope.
You know, that's all kind of the work stuff, but how did you maintain, because work-life balance is big.
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like it wasn't, I shouldn't say it wasn't big, but maybe not paid as much attention to in the past.
Okay, so
Is that a fair?
my, yeah, my, and I kind of feel like I'm the generation that has kind of, I don't want to say bridged that gap, because I don't mean to see that, say we bridged it, but I've seen both sides, because
Yeah.
my mentors were ones that, as I said, you know, they were on call every night.
Ever, yeah,
And
absolutely.
one of them, I remember him saying, and again, this was even farther back, probably in the 60s, I would guess. You know, his wife went to the hospital to have a baby, and he went in with her and paid, I think he said, $150 to the doctor and said, I'll be back. I gotta go pull a calf.
Yeah.
And, you know, that, and that was not abnormal. You know, that
Yeah.
was, everybody was okay with that because that's just the way it was.
Yeah.
I'm not sure we, anybody could get by with that today.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, depending on your wife, I guess.
Yeah.
But first of all, you wouldn't be handing $150 maybe as a copay, but
That's a difference.
yeah. But so I saw that, you know, I saw that level of work ethic, if you will, but by the same token, I realized that, because I had one child when I graduated, I had another one 2 years after, I had end up having four. So I realized that if I practiced that way, I was going to miss a lot of
Yeah.
my kids, and that just was not worth it to me. So I made a conscious effort again when I was in the position to have that choice to not miss. I was willing to sacrifice some income in
Yeah.
order to be part of my kids' lives.
I'm glad you said that. I feel like that needs to be a part of the discussion that I keep reading about in articles because I've been on call, a lot,
Yeah.
and I appreciated the experience I got from it. But when I got, like you said, when I got to certain points, I've been happy to say, I can say, well, this last year I stopped seeing after hour emergencies, or well, I'll still see them if they call before six, but
Right.
and I've appreciate the time I've gotten back for the my family and
Yeah,
friends.
yeah, yeah. And you know, and I said my children, I should include my wife in there too, obviously, because
Yeah.
it just was not going to be worth it to me. And I knew I would never be able to get those years, that time back,
Yeah.
you know, as at the growing up age. And so, you know, that's a choice I made. And I was fortunate enough to be in a position to make it.
Yeah.
But also being on the employer end, I feel like I would be, and I have been to my employees, and I'm not talking about all my employees, not just veterinarians that work for me, cognizant of those things
Yeah.
that, you know, if they had kids, if they had other stuff, I understand. I've been in that position, and I understand them wanting that time off, and I hope that I have throughout the years been accommodating to that.
Do you I always felt like you did a good job with that. So
Thank you.
I do you feel like you, looking back, did you get the work life and you've talked how it's kind of a moving goalpost as things in your life change, but do you felt like you achieved that, or maybe I should say, do you feel like you achieved that at various points of your life?
I personally do. The thing that I probably didn't do well, was the time off that I took as far as like family vacations was usually, and I know a lot of vets do this, and I know it's probably not the right thing to do. It was usually centered around a convention. So I'd get my CE. We could still call it use it as a vacation and do others. They could do other stuff, and we would, and I would go a few days before, stay a few days after, so I could do stuff with them too. But you know what I mean? It probably would have been better for me to do that and then take a separate time off to just for,
You
you know
were
what I
your
mean?
focus was divided,
But I don't think, I mean, I still think it was important that we all went together, even if it was that sort of thing. But I have a really hard time just taking a day off and being home because I have that thought, especially being an owner and you have responsibilities where you feel like you got to make money so you can pay these people because they're relying on you. You know what I mean? I have a hard time sitting here
And that
and
technology you mentioned, someone can text you a question, right?
yes, and that's helped. And that's helped. And actually having Dr. Raymer, my part-time associate now, has really helped because, and when you were there, it was much easier for me to go and do something like go Christmas shopping for my kids or take the weekend off with my wife like I would in November's, then you would cover me. You know, it was much more, my mind was at peace because no matter what you say, you have a license in that clinic, you're going to be able to take in more revenue than, the assistants and technicians that I left there could do so much, but it's that license that really, really brings in the money.
And the same, I had to make a, I just got my appendix out. I had to make a conscious decision not to push myself too quickly because I'm like, I need to take care of myself. Yet I'm like, I need to make money for, myself and the clinic and the staff that are there. And then there's animals that they're not going anywhere else either. So yeah, there's a
It
lot
is
more.
it is tough, and that always is pulling. It always been pulling at me. But I do feel like, in answer to the original question, I do feel like that I have achieved a pretty good balance overall.
Would you have said that 15 years ago when you were thinking about that?
I would have said yes, I think I would have, and I also would have said that that is my plan, because my youngest would have, 15 years ago, he'd have been five, so at that point, and the oldest would have been probably just graduating high school, so I would have said I think I've done it okay right now, because I would always go to their after schools, the academic matches, the basketball, the soccer, the softball, baseball, all of those. I hit all of those. And so I would say yes, and I plan to continue to do it 15 years ago.
Which I guess you probably don't have academic matches to go to. One of my friends went and they said they had a parents versus students on the buzzers. The parents who most of them I knew were on the team academic team back when I was on it. Apparently the parents smoked the children, so
Good for them.
So yeah, that's good to hear. I'm curious as I do more interviews, what people the younger vets will say versus the older on that question.
I'll be anxious to listen to that episode to hear what they have to say.
Because I'm also, and I'm hoping to do multiple episodes too, so spread it out and just so because I'm curious with myself because I've realized personally, I'm like, I think I'm achieving what I want. Maybe I was a little slow sometimes, but I'm getting to that spot. And when I wasn't doing it, maybe how I want it, it taught me how to be more protective of certain things. So I don't think I have regrets for sure on that front, but I also know what it's like to be on call all that time. So it's so, but that's good. What has been I guess this kind of goes along with some. What's been your favorite and least favorite part of the career of your career?
So
As you get
my
better, I'm sure you're not at your zenith yet.
right, yeah. I'm gonna have a drop the mic. I'm gonna be at my best my last day. I going back to what I said at the beginning about getting into veterinary medicine, I think that has been my favorite part is that I can be so many different things. And like I said, the business part, I really enjoy doing that, but I don't know that I would have wanted to do only that for my career. And so that I think is, and I always wanted to be an owner. I know there, at least what I hear is, at least there was a time period of time where the new graduates really didn't want ownership, and maybe that's still the way it is. I don't know, but that was not me. I always, when I was interviewing for a job 30 years ago, that's one of the things that I was looking for was the opportunity, not right away, obviously, but to eventually
Almost
own.
stupid to do that. So,
Yeah. Although I had that offer, there was a vet in Louisville that was looking to hire somebody, and he wanted to retire to Belize or Costa Rica, someplace. And I was like, no, I can't do that. 'Cause I didn't feel like I knew anything. And I didn't, no less now. But anyway, least favorite would have to be, and I'm gonna qualify this because I have worked with some company included, some really nice people that I've really enjoyed working with. And going to work was a every day was a pleasure, but overall, just the management of employees, as an owner, has to be your number one headache. If you get good ones, and I've had tons of them, but I've had some that have been challenging, and those can really bring you down. And I've only had to fire two people. Actually, kind of three, but one of them quit first, which I don't think is too bad in 30 years.
No, I wouldn't say
But
so.
and the people that I fired deserved it, but it was the hardest thing to do because these are people, and you're giving them you're taking away their source of income, even though they deserved it, in my opinion.
You want to treat people like you want to be treated. You'd want people to give you a chance, yet
Right.
when they've gotten to that point, you're like, I have to do this for the other people in the clinic, you know.
And then the other least favorite part, and I've been reminded of this just this morning twice. And this is nothing, that anybody who listens to this isn't going to understand, but it's dealing with certain people with money. You want to help these animals, and you want to do everything you can, but for whatever reason, people don't understand that you also have to keep your business afloat in order to help anybody. They think, oh, you love animals. Why aren't you doing this for free? And no matter what you say, you can't. It just seems like you're trying to justify whatever, but that's frustrating as well. But and that's not, that's a minority, but that minority is vocal.
And those stick with you too, because you want to do. I think our minds are trained to figure out how to do more, and there's not always, without sometimes too much sacrifice, the ability to do that. What any warnings to the people coming into the profession or profession problems you see, like, hey, make sure don't do this, or
Don't assume anything about anybody. Going back to what we were just saying, don't assume that somebody, just because of how they look or how they talk, or how they act, that they won't be willing to do whatever they can for their pet. I've made that mistake. And conversely, don't assume that just because somebody, the way they look, act, that they are going to do it. You may think, oh, I know these people. They come from money. They won't care what this costs. Well, they might. So be transparent about money. You know, give estimates. Say, this is what, before you go, this is what we're going to do. This is what it's going to cost. Do you want me to do that? And if not, don't judge them. Come up with another option.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you run out of options, then, but I always try to give options, like with our parvo talk.
Yeah.
You know, you can say, okay, if you want to hospitalize it with IV fluids, this, this, and this, this is what it'll be. If you don't, for whatever reason, then we can do sub-Q fluids and this and this. And if you don't want that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But don't just assume based upon appearances. The other thing is, as far as the patients go, don't get tunnel vision. And again, this is something that everybody does, and I've done it, and I still do it, and I know better. But, you know, if you have, here's an example from today. Lady calls up, says, I think my dog got something stuck in its throat. I've been practicing for 30 and a half years, and I've heard that I don't know how many times, and I've had exactly one animal with something stuck in its throat. Okay. But the one today, I thought, there's nothing stuck in that dog's throat. But unless I see it, I don't know. It may be that one.
Yeah.
And I remember the one that came in, and then I was like, there's never anything in the dog's throat. And by golly, there was. And so, you know, don't look at the dog, look at the animal, try to have an open mind and let them tell you the story. Let them tell you what's wrong versus you going in and saying, okay, this dog's shaking its head. It's got a yeast infection in its ears. Because if you, and don't skimp on the physical exam. Get a routine and do the same thing, nose to tail every time, and you're not going to miss stuff. And I have missed stuff. I'm telling you, there's probably not a mistake I haven't made. So I'm not preaching. I'm teaching.
If you haven't made it, I've probably made it. So between anyone you want to thank for where you are in the profession or getting into it through this
profession? So I'm going to go back to my undergrad days at Transylvania University, and Dr. Lila Boyarsky was my advisor, and she's the one that really got me in on the biology, not necessarily veterinary medicine, but biology track. I would be remiss if I didn't thank my wife for sticking. She was a respiratory therapist. She got her degree right before we moved to Tennessee to vet school, and she put me through vet school. So she should be number one. She is. And then Doctors Hayden and Boyd from where, you know, I worked and I bought, you know, those guys taught me the real world stuff. You know, you come out of school and I could have treated a Cushing dog, you know, with my eyes closed, but I had never done a C-section, you know, I mean, it's stuff like that. And they taught me a lot of the common sense stuff, and you know, you're not going to get into school just because, I mean, that's just the way it is. It's life. And those would be the four main people.
Yeah. Would you do it all again?
Absolutely. I would. Knowing what, if I knew exactly, I mean, obviously I'd make some changes in that. If I knew what I knew now, there were some mistakes I wouldn't make. But as far as my life path, I don't know that I would change anything.
Thank you for sharing all this. I've enjoyed hearing it. It filled in a few blanks I didn't know about you, but
good.
Also, when I was talking to someone else, I was like, it's helping balance me as well. So I hope that people will hear that and be like, wait a second, maybe my life isn't as chaotic as I think it is. So, you
Well,
know,
good. I hope that helps.
yeah, no, I appreciate the time and sharing, and then of course we'll both miss Primor. So
That's right.
I'm Dr. Nathan. Thanks for listening. I hope our discussions are valuable to you and aid in giving perspective. If you want to contact us, please reach out to theveterinarypodcast@gmail.com. You can find a complete list of the podcast episodes on SoundCloud. If you find this information helpful and want more content, please join our Patreon, patreon.com/theveterinarypodcast. And don't forget to follow our Facebook page, facebook.com/theveterinarypodcast. As always, thanks for listening, and I hope this information is helpful to you. If you do find it helpful, please like it, share it, so other people may find it helpful as well. Thank you.